Hello and welcome to How Is Today, the podcast and project aiming to break the silence around grief by showing friends how to talk about it, one curious question at a time. So today we have a very special guest. It's a beautiful, sunny London afternoon, which is very uncharacteristic. And I've got actually a really sunny face in front of me. Her name is Amber Jeffrey. She is the founder and creator of a podcast and community called The Grief Gang, which, and I'm just going to read this here. Welcome to the gang you never asked to be part of.
That's the one.
Yeah, I feel that. And I'm sure lots of people feel like that. I think there was a time where Albie and I were thinking maybe the subline to something like this would be welcome to the club you never wanted to join, but everybody's going to end up joining it. So welcome. I'm super, super excited to have you here.
Oh, thank you, Claire. I'm really, really excited to be here at our first in-person recording and like yonks, for me, yonks, and for you, ever.
Yeah.
So exciting.
Yeah, it makes it feel real. I think this is part of the second season. So the first season for us was trying to put words around something that we'd been feeling for such a long time and wanted to explore whether something like this would be valuable in this space. So Albie and I's project and the reason that we connected initially was because, like we were just talking about, when you meet someone who's gone through something similar to you, you get connected and you can almost sense, like you were saying, the spidey senses, that there is something there that this person is going to teach you and you're going to learn from them. And I feel the same way about you and the other people that we bring into this space and have conversations with. So this first season was really an exploration into whether there was something that we could find to help contribute to the space of grief and try to help, I think, promote new culture around grief, because what we found was there's so much silence and stigma around talking about grief.
Yeah.
So much so, and I'd love to have your perspective on this, that we didn't even consider it as part of an experience of losing our parents. Granted, we were quite young and I was 13 and you were 19. So it would be good, I think, to kick off. We're going to do the intro into what The Grief Gang is and what you are trying to change with that, because it's super interesting and there's lots to talk about there. But I would like to start off with a question around whether you had thought about grief being part of the experience of losing your mum, or whether, like me, you sort of, you got a little bit shocked by it and then had to go through a process of accepting grief as part of your life from that point on?
Oh, it's a great question. It's a great question, because you're always told, if somebody dies, grief comes in tow. What does grief really look like to you? And I suppose I didn't really realise how much grief played a part in my life and subsequently for the rest of my life until about that year three, when I hit that and I hit rock bottom and I realized, oh my God, what have I been doing for these last 3 years? I thought I was grieving in the sense I would write things, I would speak, I'd be like, oh yeah, I'm grieving, but actually I don't think I was. I think I was just in survival mode. And it was only when I hit that third year and I hit rock bottom, and I was, I've not been grieving, looks all different to everybody else. But at that point I thought, no, I haven't been grieving at all. I've been suppressing it. And it's only really since the work of Grief Gang that I've come to the acceptance of, yes, okay, this is grief. Like, this is mourning almost in some senses as well. And this is for life. So I don't think, no, I think it took me a while. Yeah, I think the shock was for those 3 years. That was more shock than anything. And then once I hit that rock bottom, I went, okay, yeah, now it's time to grieve and find healthy coping mechanisms. Because when I look back at those 3 years, I went, yeah, no, we've not been doing anything really quite good here or actually healthy to help with the grief. So yeah, shock played a huge part for me, and shock and the trauma of it, and kind of that first year is still such a blank for me. Like I really try and piece it together even now, and it's just such a blackout, and I don't know how to piece it together.
We lost our mums in quite similar ways, as in that they were very sudden.
Yeah.
Neither of us were expecting to wake up the next day and go, oh shit.
Yeah, my mum's dead.
They're not here anymore, even though she's dead.
Yeah.
For us, and actually for you as well, because she had a heart attack. You got a call while you were out shopping, not expecting to have a phone call like that or have to deal with that situation. So you go from completely normal. And I was listening again to your My Story podcast first episode, where you were saying you know, I was having
what a throwback.
I was having, I know it's great, but I was having the year. Everything was great. I had such a good community of people around me. I was at school, 19. That's that blessed age where
passed my driving test, got my first like proper job.
Yeah,
went to Paris for my birthday. I was actually speaking about this the other day with somebody, and I said, I actually remember when my mum died, I almost kicked myself and I went, of course, Amber, your life was too good to be true. You just had the most amazing month in May and like just everything was on the up. Of course, you couldn't have had it that good. I was like, all right, something bad could happen, but not my mum dying. Like, give me points on my license or something. I don't know. Don't kill my mum off, universe. Like, what the fuck?
Exactly. No, this is someone in the story of your life. Like, and everything was going great for Amber until one day she's in Debenhams.
Yeah. And just mum's dying. Oh, okay.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I wonder how much that trauma and shock, because it was so sudden, anesthetized you for that year, because I resonate a lot with that, because ours was, oh, we're sitting on a sun lounger on Boxing Day in Thailand, having a really great family holiday. We're surrounded by our nearest and dearest. I mean, we had kind of like, you know, pretty much all of the people in our life that we loved out there, and then suddenly get hit by a tsunami, which is a crazy experience. And obviously you don't expect, like, your mum having a heart attack, you don't expect that. And I've sort of wondered and been reading into The Body Keeps the Score and all of those trauma books, which I found so helpful. And I would love to have some sort of book club space or maybe get them on the podcast and ask them some questions. But it's like trying to understand what's grief, what's trauma. And then when you're trying to explain grief to other people, it's so different for how different the situation is that you lose your person and then how old you are and all of those sorts of elements. It's like trying to understand how that journey's going to go for you, even though it's not linear.
No, absolutely. And you make a really good point there of how you kind of how you lose your person. And it's a tricky one to, and it's not diminishing anyone's loss and how they lost their person and whether, you know, your person was terminally ill and watching them die. I said it recently, sort of, you know, trauma is trauma. Like losing someone who you love dearly is a traumatic event. And you touching there and The Body Keeps a Score. It's a book that I've started. Do you know what?
It's a tough
one. Oh, Clem, honest to God. I got thus far and I was like, I want to see it through. But I do agree, it's a fantastic book. And
even though you haven't read it.
I'm about 35% through. And we're still on the kind of the veteran side of the veteran and stuff like that and the trauma there. But when I was reading that, I was like, I kind of had come to the terms of kind of how my trauma, my grief is in my body.
Yeah.
And as I've gone on to have conversations with my community, I was like, oh, maybe I'm not, I knew I wasn't the only one, but how different it looked for other people and how their bodies held the grief in their body and the trauma. Some people have like gained arthritis from their grief and they've gone to the doctors and the doctor's like, I just don't know like where's arthritis come from. And they kind of go psychologically and they're like, yeah, that's probably playing a factor. Like, how is your grief giving you arthritis? People's eczema flares up. They get really, like, it starts from within.
Yeah.
That's why it's so important to talk about it, because when that's normally when it starts affecting your bodies, when people start listening to it, they'll start going, right, I'm lethargic. I have no energy. I don't want to do anything. I've got no appetite. I'm either losing or gaining loads of weight, like just for no reason. And actually look internally, they go, yeah, I probably haven't really spoken about what's going on in here, up here in my heart. And when they do, they drastically see the changes. It's phenomenal. I put a call out on my Instagram a couple of weeks ago, kind of like, how does grief affect your body? And the responses were insane. Hundreds of people, just all different parts. And I shared them all. I shared them in the hope of people seeing them going like, you know, when you have that eczema flare up, it's not just you, don't worry. There's like 20 other people who, with their grief, it's flaring up as well. It is fascinating, you know, the whole grief in the body. But yeah, I'm still yet to finish that book. Part of me is a bit like, oh God, I don't know if I want to.
No, it's good. It's
the word's just so small.
It's dense. I think what changed for me reading that book is it gave me permission to feel grief and to still be feeling it now and to still be feeling the effects of the tsunami now, but more so because we were battered a little bit. It was a very physical experience. But I didn't break anything majorly and really miraculously wasn't injured that much. I kind of walked out of it with scratches and things like that. But you know, the big, the big breaks were internal. Mm-hmm. And that book gave me permission to really accept that that had had an effect and to start unpicking that and giving it some space and be reflective with the things that helped, like yoga. My aunt, immediately when I got back, she was like, okay, well, I go to this yoga class on a Tuesday evening, so you're coming with me 2 hours every Tuesday.
Amazing.
And looking back now, I feel like that almost saved my life in a way. Because it's the, he talks about it, this in the book, you're doing the coordination between the two sides. It's soothing the brain. You're doing inhalations, exhalations, which is like the parasympathetic and the sympathetic nervous system. And there's all of these ways that you kind of decode a human.
Mm-hmm.
And when a human has had trauma, there's a way that you need to, there's a way that you need to manage it. Mm-hmm. And I think what was so ignorant of me was thinking, keep calm and carry on, just don't mention it, say you're fine, and everyone going, you're doing great, you're doing absolutely
feeding
amazing
it. Yeah,
and it's like, oh, okay, cool, this is the way to be, and actually that's not the way to be. And that's one of the things that drives Albie and I, because a bit like you with the hitting rock bottom, but it didn't happen 3 years later for us, it happened kind of like a decade where it was sort of, why is life still feeling really gray, or what are all of these physical symptoms that are popping up? Because I'm healthy, I'm exercising, I eat well, but yet something's going wrong.
Something's not right. You said you were 13.
I was 13 when
you were 13. Yes, so for decades, go through all this, and it's those teen years. Like obviously, I was nine. I just turned 19, and battling with just one, your regular gripes of being a teenager and just trying to find out who you are, what you want to be, where you want to do, what kind of morals you have. And throwing a bit of trauma as well. I mean, it's a recipe, isn't it?
I mean, yeah, no one wants to dance at the disco with a girl that has a literal black mark of death on her eye. I had the slit above my eye.
Oh,
a bit
my
like,
God.
I felt like Harry Potter in a way.
But just like a bit lower.
Yeah, I know, just like, looks like a weird kind of punk rock scar. And it was purple and livid. And I was just sort of standing there at the disco going, this is me.
Mm-hmm.
Lot to carry. Anyone want to chat?
Anyone want a boogie?
anyone want a Smirnoff Ice? No. I mean, but that's the way for lots of people.
Yeah.
And lots of, there's, you get stories like that when you start opening up about this and entering the spaces where you say, I'm living with grief. I had this experience when I was younger. And then there are other people that go, oh, hey, yo, me too.
Mm-hmm.
Let's chat about that. And you've got your own war stories to swap. It makes it all feel a lot more normal, which, again, is something. So tell me and tell everybody about the Grief Gang podcast. And before you do, so I'm not sure, I think I mentioned this to you at the Grief Gang Gala.
Yeah.
I reached out to Poppy Chancellor,
who
is another ray of sunshine.
Yes, and our lovely Pops.
Yeah, and I just sort of was drawn to her like a moth to a flame, because she's so
eccentric
and so colourful.
She went for a cold swim this morning.
That's intense.
I am yet to join her.
Probably that's very, very good.
I did it last year, and I nearly had palpitations. But she was like, just keep swimming. I was like, oh my God.
Where did you go? The pond?
No, Brighton Sea.
Oh my gosh.
Brighton Sea,
That's intense.
Yeah.
I went to the ponds in Hampstead Heath, got in and went and turned a little bit pale. And the woman on the side was like, get out, you're not having a good time. I was
like, your body is telling you no.
Yeah, get out. Sorry. Felt so ashamed. So I reached out to Poppy and said, me and a friend Albie want to do something in this space, and we're just exploring, we're trying to understand who's doing what, because we don't want to duplicate, but also kind of need a bit of confidence about this space exists and you're looking for community, you're looking for for community at that stage. So I met Poppy the day before, and she said, okay, I'm doing this meetup called The Grief Case, and it's just been running for a couple of months, but come along and you'll meet some people. And Albie couldn't come, I went, and it was a bit like a seance.
Yeah.
It was beautiful, all filled with women, of course.
Yeah.
And but young, from I think the youngest might have been about 14, 15, 16, and then up to I think about like 30 something. And I had thought, I'm gonna do this project, it's gonna be great, I'm doing it for the community, I'm not doing it for myself, I'm fine. And sat there, and she gets everybody to go around the room and introduce themselves and talk about their person.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like a hand was reaching out from 6 feet under, grabbing my throat and squeezing it. I couldn't say anything. And I spent the rest of the 60 minutes just crying and being so, like, so upset, you know, like there was stuff I was tapping into that I hadn't tapped into for absolutely ages. And I realized, okay, yeah, I mean, this is a bigger thing for me. It's not just about, I want to change culture. It's like, it's going to really change the way I live my life.
Yeah.
And you popped up at the end and you were like, hi, I'm Amber. Lost my mum 4 years ago. I now do the Grief Gang podcast. And I was looking at you and all like, I want to get there.
But when I started sobbing though, then I started sobbing.
But then you were fine afterwards. I was still like,
I was like, I'd been at that point to about two different kind of grief meetups from separate organisations and charities. And I thought, oh, I'm going to go to meet Poppy. Me and Poppy had been speaking online for a little bit. Mm. And you become so well-versed in your story, don't you? And how, hi, I'm Amber, blah, 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 my mum died, blah, blah, blah. And there was something about being in that space where it was just so calming, and yet the candles, and it was just like on that long table. Mm. And just Poppy's energy anyway, she's just got a nature to hold a room. And I realised as I was talking and talking and talking, then I started tapping into things that were like, shit, I've not spoken about this like in any kind of public space, even on the podcast at this point. And I remember crying and trying to stifling it, but then looking out into the sea of people and actually being like, oh no, it's okay. Mm. It's okay to. But I've been in many rooms, like with yourself, Clem, but with the people, when you were given the permission to, and there's no one stopping you, especially when you're crying. And I think that was one thing that was quite quite moving for me in that grief case meeting, is that no one came and like pandered to me and was like soothing to almost stop the crying, because that is kind of essentially when someone is like sobbing and crying and you put even it's a loving hand, it's not intending to stop them. It kind of does kind of naturally stop you from crying. But if you need to let that out, you need to let that out. And I realized that in that moment when I was just sat there crying and not a hand was on me, not a thing, and just let me do it. I went, this is game changing. Mm. But for some people that is so painfully uncomfortable because you've never been given the permission to. You've only been given the permission to kind of just tell the baseline of like, yeah, my person died, this was how, this was when, blah, blah, blah. When actually someone goes, okay, you're like, what really happened? How was that for you? And you're like, and literally does feel like that hand. And literally feel that hand is choking you and it's like, no, we're not ready yet. Mm. We're not ready yet, or we are. And if I cry, is that kind of, will I be able to pick myself back up off the floor again? Mm. If I let the floodgates open, are we going to be good? Mm. And you don't know until you do. You just got to take that leap. And that time of that grief case, I just let it out. I was like, oh! I was sobbing.
It's so interesting what you're saying about the permission, because I think that's so the reason why we called the podcast How Is Today is because we want to give people permission to ask, as in friends to ask. Mm-hmm. It's to encourage that permission to ask and say, hey bud, how are you doing? Yeah. Because like you said at the beginning, this is for life. Mm-hmm. It's not just after a year. And no. Like you've talked about, like I've talked about, it sort of starts to sink in after a few years because that's when you realize this is normal.
Yep.
Wait, this is really shit because I'm trying to do loads of things differently. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, just life goes on and there's new challenges. So it's that permission that you're trying to give somebody who's close to you that hears or knows that you've lost someone.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm checking in. And it's also the permission to keep asking after you feel like the time has passed. You know, Mother's Day, for example. Mm-hmm. Hey, what's going on?
Yeah.
And I think what's interesting about some of the feedback with the phrase how is today is some people are taking it really literally and going I really love it and I want to be asked it all the time, and some people are going, I don't want to be asked that. I don't need someone checking in. And again, it emphasizes how much you have to, as a friend, and obviously this is a space for people who are going through this, but really what we want to do is get people who gone through this to listen to this and go, yeah, okay, like I feel like I've understood things a lot more and understand that, you know, my friends want me to check in.
Yeah.
Not constantly, not to say, a curious question isn't, are you sad that your mum's dead? Which is what I've
like
had
asking
before.
That is like, yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah, like, is the sky like, blue?
Yeah. Do you want, what kind of answer do you want? Yeah. Where do you want to go here?
Do you really want this today?
Yeah.
That's so interesting, Clem, of like, people saying that how they're reacting to the title of the podcast of, as I'm thinking as like a friend, and you're supporting someone, and they listen to the show and they're more inspired to reach out to their friends and to check in with how they are and to receive maybe a bit of a bitey answer from said friend of, why do you keep asking me? It is things like that would make you recoil. And that's something for me that because I was an absolute beast with my friends, like when my mum died.
I really want to talk about this because you talk about the anger.
Yeah, so anyone who's listening here, who's a friend supporting a grieving person, if your friend is like how I was, it might be of interest for you. It might, you might recognise your friend in a lot of it. And so hopefully then you actually realise this isn't them as a person. It's actually quite a lot of their grief. But to touch on that, to go back to, so yeah, when my mum died, I was part of a really big friendship girl group. We were from school all the way through like middle school into secondary school. And we were a tight unit. They knew my mum very well. They used to come to our house for loads of times. And then she dies. And they were so fantastic in the beginning, like came to the funeral at the hospital. Like they were just there, like full force. And then as time goes on, as we do, the checking in begins to dwindle a little bit. I began to change as a complete person. My priorities are completely different. I really don't give like a flying shit for the things that they care about anymore, i.e. when's the next like social event that we're going to, the boy problems. Like it sounds really mean and I was quite an arsehole. I'm nodding.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I like I look back now and I think, well, that for them was obviously like the biggest thing in their life. But for me, the biggest thing in my life was my mum has just died on the tape. Like, what the fuck? But at the time, I was like, I didn't give any grace. And I can say this now from hindsight. And some people are thinking, oh, what do you mean giving grace? And stick with me. I very much wanted my friends to read my mind. I was not vocal at all in how or what I needed. It just simply came out in anger. Anger was the most familiar emotion that I knew. All of you can piss off, go away. You don't understand me. You've not asked me about my mum for how long. And sometimes they did, but it would come off like the back of an argument once I'd been like, you don't do this. I wanted them to do it naturally because they wanted to. And it got to a point where I had pushed so many of them away that eventually ended up with like no close immediate friends. And for a while, I was like, yeah, don't need them. Don't need them. Screw them all, blah, blah, blah. And then it was about a year probably after I started Grief Gang, potentially, I met up with two of those friends from that friendship group. Those were ones I didn't have kind of like explosive fallings out with. It kind of just dwindled as the group disintegrates stuff. And I'm really good friends with still one of my friends from there. And we met up after and I spent some good time then. So that was 1 year after Grief Gang. So then that's now 4 years after mum. So we fell out probably about a year after my mum. So again, that year, I'm still people like, where did our friendship fall apart? There's so much packed into that 1 year after that. Goodness, if I went to like a hypnotist or something like that, they'd uncover it and I'd go, whoa. And we met up and we spoke and we just kind of catching up on life. And then we kind of got to the point of why we were meeting to kind of talk about all that went down. And first thing that I immediately felt for me, I wanted to say was, I said, I'm sorry, because not because of how things went down, but just actually more for how I articulated myself. I don't regret that we're not friends anymore. I don't wish them to be in my life, but I think it was more for my own peace of mind. I so wish that I articulated myself better, but I don't berate myself for that because I didn't know how to. I didn't know the language. I didn't actually really know what I was feeling. I didn't realise that my anger was actually my grief. And I thought I was just really annoyed at them because they didn't do X, Y, Z. No, I just had quite a lot of grief that I didn't know how and where to pour it into. And unfortunately, it wasn't my friend. And that really hurt. Looking back, I realised actually my best friends weren't actually my like home team, people that I can talk with about my mum. They knew her so well. Why can't I come and talk to you? And I was speaking with them. We were just kind of going through it. And they turned around and they were like, we were so worried about you, but we didn't know what to say either. And we looked back and we were like, we were 19-year-old girls, 19, 20-year-old girls. We probably didn't know how to articulate ourselves in the best of situations, let alone like have big feelings about like death, dying and grief.
You say that though, but I think I've got a similar story with my dad and his best friend, who's my godfather, who his daughter Alice is going to be joining us on the podcast as well. They came back, bearing my dad had almost lost me and my sister and lost my mum. And Mike had lost his wife, his daughter and his mum. They walk into a room to have a dinner and their best friends ignored them, avoided them because they couldn't find the words, not because they didn't care. Yeah. It's more they cared so much, yeah. but they couldn't find the words. They couldn't find the courage. Mm-hmm. And you talked, I've had so many stories like this about people who go to funerals and they can't bring themselves to talk to the parents because yeah. there's that awkwardness. Mm-hmm. And I feel like age isn't an excuse because the same patterns keep repeating. It's a yeah. cultural thing.
Yeah.
And to our point earlier about who should be taught about how to talk about grief. And mm-hmm. if you can talk about grief, if you can tackle grief, mm-hmm. grief is expansive of all of the different types of emotions yeah. that you will then feel. Because like you've talked about, it's anger, it's anxiety, it's mm-hmm. depression. It's so many different things, which is why we like the octopus, because it's like, yeah. you can have the eight because yeah. you don't know what's coming, you know? And that's why it's confusing. Mm-hmm. And you're not taught about, I think we're not taught enough about emotions.
No.
And how, you know, when we're talking about the physical impact, the physical side of emotions, mm-hmm. you know, there's so much that's wrapped up into that. Mm-hmm. And I've learned so much with trying to unpick some of the ways that I've tried to put a handle over the grief mm-hmm. and not feel it and not feel anything.
Yeah.
That I think even if you're 19, even if you're 55, I think even if you're 9, those are the conversations that we need to be having. Yeah. Everybody needs to do this type of work because yeah. everybody will lose someone.
But absolutely. Also death and taxes. Death and taxes. Do infinite things in life. Definitely going to happen. I feel like part that feeds into it is we as human beings, and kind of whether you're, you know, a sociopath or a psychopath, we're conditioned to kind of fix people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the other day, I went to Cambridge the other day to do a panel discussion there, and there was a lady in the audience, and she asked a question, and she was kind of like a sharing, and she was like, my mum died X amount of years ago, and then later on, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. Mm. It was stage 2, it was curable. Mm. She was like, I got more support when I got my diagnosis than when my mum died.
Yeah.
And she's like, why do you think that is? And we were kind of going through it together, and I was like, I'm no specialist. I said, but the thing that's probably coming to me is that people saw your breast cancer and they're like, it's fixable. It's something that we can fix. We can support you in this. We can like get stuck in. There is a cure for this. There is a light at the end of the tunnel.
Mm.
Whereas your mum dying, your mum's dead. Like they can't fix this. There's nothing that they can do or say that is going to alleviate this pain for you. So they feel redundant. And so when you take away kind of, yeah, that ability for somebody to be like the fixer for them, and I'm not saying everybody wants to be the person wants to fix, but when there is nothing to say other than, I'm so sorry, this is so shit.
Mm.
Some people can't fathom that. They think saying that. And for some people like that. Just stating the obvious. I'm really sorry for your loss. There is nothing that I can say or do that's going to help, like, alleviate this pain for you.
Mm.
Just acknowledging that, I think, takes guts.
Mm.
And for some people, we're just not there. So that's why some people will look the other way. They won't message for however long.
Mm.
There's some children that are so kind of like death and grief literate and just a little bit more, so much better than like their elders. And you think, if a kid can do it, why can't, like a 50-year-old person do it?
Mm.
We do have a long way to go as a society. Mm. And I kind of feel like I'm in a little bit of a bubble because I surround myself with so many people that are quite literate in it and like know things to say. So that when I hear like stories like you just said, I think, oh my God, that feels like such a lifetime ago because almost I've consciously surrounded myself with people who wouldn't do something like that. Mm. But obviously it still happens, still is today. I get messages from people all the time of just horrific things that people are doing and turning their back on them. And I think, oh no, Amber, like your bubble, like it's because I've created it, but this is still happening for a lot of people. Mm. People are still really experiencing such awful responses and care from their close vicinity.
Mm. One of the things that you spoke about in your podcast was that 3-year mark, plodding along and then finding out or kind of accepting that you needed some support. So then you had a look about the options in the NHS and tried to find something from there, and did a bit of exploration into online therapy, which turns out to be really transactional, impersonal, and put you off.
Yeah.
But so I'm interested because I feel like this with How Is Today and with all of the amazing people that I meet, like you and others, I'm learning so much.
Mm.
It's almost like creating, what Albie and I wanted to do is create a space for people who needed to access media or content or community around grief because there really wasn't anything when we were younger.
Yeah.
It's kind of exploded for the last couple of years, which is amazing. Mm-hmm. And it's so, so brilliant. I'm so, so happy, one, to be a part of it, but two, to see it all kind of bloom
and take
shape. Yeah, because I'm learning so much.
Oh, all the time.
Yeah, all the time. And I'm just, and my life keeps getting better for having accepted grief. And it's changed my relationships with my friends. That's why I was interested to hear about your friends.
Yeah.
It's transformed the relationships in my family. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm so much more of an open person and accepting, okay, there's grief and there's the octopus and you've got all of those big ones.
Yeah.
But then all the other side, there's like a different coloured octopus with like, hey, there's joy up
there.
Like, you can feel that now. Yeah. I'm like, oh, this is good.
Yeah, like that one comes into the sea and you're like, hello, new octopus. What are you doing here?
Yeah. Two glasses of champagne, you
have? Yeah.
I and will. He's like, so one of the things I want to ask as we wind down is about the space that you have with grief in your life. What kind of space does it occupy? How do you see it? So like we've talked about how we see it as an octopus because we want to make it tangible and also a little bit like give people who don't understand it something physical and something visible to be able to identify with.
Absolutely.
So it's a framework in a way.
I love that. No, yeah, I think absolutely making, and that's quite, I think, a common technique in the therapy room of making like a feeling, like a physical thing. You know, you see kind of, I just remember a child before that I knew, they had like an anxiety little monster bear. And so kind of when they felt anxious, or they would write in it and put it in the belly of it. And it was like,
that's great,
isn't it? And imagine that in grief, like your little grief bear, writing how you're feeling, stuffing it in. Let's make it, Clem. Let's make the bears. But I find it very much easier on those really, I think probably more on my downest, but I'm learning to incorporate it on the really good days as well. I'd like to see like my grief as my friend. And before, in the early days, I almost felt like it was this shadow, like just this shadow around, and this ugly monster and this bear. And now I write about it on the podcast and on the Instagram before, I wrote about it not long ago, of how I try and envision it. It's like this friend that's with me for life, and it's a working relationship as well. And
I so agree with that.
Yeah, it's a never-ending project, a relationship, and you do have to nurture it. Because when you neglect it, it's when it gets really angry.
Totally.
Really angry and really invasive and rude. And I know it in myself when I become a little bit more biting. I'm so far removed from that Amber who was so angry at the world. And I almost look back and I think, like, you were a beast, like an absolute beast. And I think, who knows if I was ever to get back at that point. But I like to think that I wouldn't, because I've created like this friendship with my grief. And people might think, oh, it sounds a bit woo-woo. But you do. The more you neglect it, the more it is going to ramp up and come, no, we need to talk. That's what I did for the 3 years. I went, don't want to look at you, don't want to talk to you, nothing. And it played ball for the good 3 years, and then it went, enough now.
Yeah.
You're going to face up to me now. We're going to be friends. Basically, it was forcing to be my friend.
Yeah.
And now I've noticed the more I actually feed into it, and which through the work with the grief gang, and there are times when you have to put it down and be like, no, it's not everyday grief and feeding into it.
Yeah.
But it's such a blooming relationship now. It really is. And it kind of feeds into the relationship with my mum. Like,
totally.
Yeah, my relationship with my mum is still ongoing.
Yeah.
As I'm getting older and into womanhood and hopefully potentially motherhood one day, like, I know the relationship is going to change so much. Already now I kind of think, oh, some of the choices my mum made, maybe I wouldn't have done that. Or, yeah, I probably would too. It's an ongoing relationship. And I think when people kind of realise that too, that adds another bit of acceptance as well, of that just because they died doesn't mean that your relationship hasn't. And I think it's really hard to grapple with at first. And it kind of clicks. And you think, when you realise, actually, no, your grief is for life. Like, it's not for a certain time period. And I suppose what feeds into kind of like, yeah, like the time period that people... I remember before, I used to think, oh no, yeah, I'll be done with this in like 5 years. Like, 5 years tops, I'll probably be okay. And I am okay, but it's still here. It was in that moment I thought, yeah, I'll be done with this like mourning and this really relentless crying and the actual physical pain. And yeah, I don't have it as frequent, but my gosh, yeah, does it come back? And being okay with that and actually letting it come in as it does on like a random Tuesday, like washing the dishes, and I'm like, I'm feeling it today. And that's when my little grief friend comes in and is like, do you want to talk about it? And I'm like, yeah, let's talk today, grief friend.
Yeah, just as you were describing all of that, I resonated with that so, so strongly. I don't think I would have done a year ago, but I do now. And my life is so much better having accepted that grief is an ongoing state of being, and grief does not equal horror and sadness and depression. That's not what that is.
Yeah.
Grief is with, I mean, and actually, you know, when you were, you put a call out on Instagram about write about grief.
Yeah.
I wrote a whole page of grief is X, grief is X, just trying to unpick it for myself. And I realized how many different shapes and shades of grief you have and how much I would love to live, keep living my life with healthy culture around grief, personal healthy approach to grief, because if there's no grief, there's no memory of my mum.
Yeah.
So that octopus needs to be tamed. I need to respect it, acknowledge it in the room.
Respect is huge,
Respecting
it, yeah.
You know, and if you, for so long, I think what had made me so unhappy was trying to ignore that grief was a part of my life and not respecting it.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're doing there is you're disrespecting your mother.
Yeah.
Because if you ignore the grief, you ignore the person.
Yeah.
And what's your place in the world? How do you explain your place in the world if you deny that person's existence? And also, what a fucking shame for them and everything that they did in their life. Do you know?
Yeah, it is. And it's, I look at people in my family. So my mum's side of the family were very estranged now. And that's because they've neglected their grief. And that's not my job or my role to like enforce them to do their grief and like tap into their grief. It's too painful for them, it's too painful. But what infuriates me and upsets me is that, yeah, like you've just said, by not accepting your grief or tapping into it, I feel like, yeah, you're doing a disservice for my mum. And not everybody will agree with that. And but people might think, and that's not to say that, you know, go out and make a thing of your grief, make a show, make an Instagram, whatever. Whatever expressing or respecting and acknowledging your grief looks like, whether that's internally, journaling, quietly to yourself, that's okay. I'm really big on, and it's so contradicting, of not having to turn your pain into purpose. And that's another thing that's like coming, again, it's never bloody ending of like what you're learning with your grief. Like I would probably used to chant from the rooftops, like turn your grief, like pain into purpose, like don't let them die in vain. And now, even though someone who has done like pain into purpose and like ourselves, I'm so huge on people being like, you know, you don't have to run into, sometimes a tragedy is just a tragedy and it can just be that. You don't have to go and change the world. You can sit with you in your grief, in your home, however that looks like, and do the work there. That's just something that's been coming to me a lot lately, because I feel like that we live in such like a hustle culture. It's like a tangent, a hustle culture. And it was about being productive, that productive has now, and it's now seeped its way into grief. It's insane. And it is, you know, testament to the online community now. When I started in 2019, there was quite a small pool of us. And now, and it's tragic, obviously, for the last 2 years and kind of the pandemic and the amount of death we have seen has rocketed it. And there are now hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of people creating spaces. And it's amazing because then that's a space for everybody. But some people are creating it kind of the turning pain into purpose. And when like that pain is too much, but you've still got the purpose to fulfill, you're like, fuck this. And it's hard. Like when I think about like with Grief Gang and everything that's come from it, and it's amazing and like something so stupid. Like I changed my logo yesterday.
I saw it. Yeah. <great. laughs>
But I was like, oh my God, this feels really insane, because I was like, oh my God, am I grieving a logo? Because when that little logo that we started before, the first one, when we started it, like I didn't ever dream that it would be like as where it is today, with the opportunities and the community that it's helping. But I sit and I think, okay, this community, it's now moved more away from kind of like constantly digging in. When you're constantly having to dig into your own trauma and your own loss, it's so exposing. And sometimes I'm up for it. Sometimes I'm like, I've got loads to say today. Sometimes I don't. And that's why I so enjoy having the community, because I can go, here's the mic for you. Like, I'm tired sometimes, and here is the mic, and I want to amplify other people's voices as well. At first it started for me, and it is always really essentially for me, and I'm selfish, like it's my creative outlet, but it's become such a vast community, and I'm so interested in storytelling. Storytelling is so huge in grief, and I think in healing. And
totally.
And it's really underplayed. People think, and there's got to be a solution, though. At the end of it, I think, no, you can just tell someone's story, and you can see their shoulders drop, and they go, oh,
totally,
I've been listened to today. Yeah. Even if it's just a DM, someone just telling their whole story. I get loads of DM people saying, just, I wanted to share it with you. Yeah. I just felt safe here. And I go, that's absolutely fine. I'm not going to give you an answer, a bit of advice, because one, I'm not probably professionally able to. And more so, I know that you just writing that, people, I've put messages before from people, they've said, I've written this message like hundreds of times and then deleted it. And I'm just now finally sending it because I just wanted to release it. But Grief Gang community is just, it's changed my life for the better and just in my own grief. And just being so held all the time. Like I was saying the other day, I think on another podcast, the feeling of like alone and loneliness is obviously different. Loneliness is still very like prevalent in my life sometimes. You just feel lonely, but like alone, don't feel that anymore because of this community.
Yeah, I agree. It's like
loneliness is very like, it's the internal of like, I just feel really lonely and I can't really describe that, but alone. I think someone said, like, when was the last time you felt like alone? And I was like pre-Grief Gang, because I'm never alone anymore now of Grief Gang. I can share something and just like, anyone else feel like this? And even if it's one person will go, me too, okay, I'm not alone. I'm not alone in this. And that's what I hope I can provide for Grief Gang and its community, is that you're never alone in it. There is always at least one person, and especially in this little corner of the world. And if not, I'll go and find them. I will go and find them for you.
That's such a nice note to end on, I think. So I want to ask one final question, which is, how is today, Amber?
Today is a great day. The sun is shining and we're going into Easter weekend. And it's a tricky Easter weekend because it was a really big thing in our household. Mum should really make a big to-do about it. But new traditions are beginning and it's kind of been passed down to me. I'm kind of the head of new traditions and I feel really happy and just hopeful.
I love that.
Yeah, happy and hopeful today.
I love that. Thank you so much. And thank you so much for coming. It's been such a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you for having me, Clem.
Thanks for listening to this episode of How Is Today, the podcast on a mission to break the silence around grief with one curious question at a time. We want you to join us with this mission and join the conversation. So find us on Instagram at How Is Today or online at our website. We want to hear from you. And remember, if your friend has an octopus, don't be scared if you don't know how to talk about it. Just ask a curious question and start with How Is Today.